Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today on the show, we have Andy Reid. For most of his life, Andy grew up, stayed, and worked in Glasgow, Scotland. Having attended Bellarmine Secondary School in the south side of Glasgow, Andy subsequently left at age 16 and worked in a number of unskilled jobs. After some soul-searching, however, he returned to college and subsequently managed to graduate from the University of Glasgow. With dreams of being a pop sensation, Andy sang in a number of bands in Glasgow during the infamous mullet phase in Scotland's history, and yes, he did have one. Having failed to make an appearance on the BBC's showcase music show, Top of the Pops, which would have signaled imminent superstardom, Andy turned his focus on becoming a stand-up comedian, which he did successfully for 3 years. Andy moved to America in 2007, where he graduated from the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, with a teaching degree. He co-hosts Catskill Cabin Conversations with Mike Porter, myself, and to his amazement is allowed on the air on Monday afternoons to talk rubbish during WGXC's afternoon show. Andy, welcome and thank you for this opportunity to have me co-host Catskill Cabin Conversations with you.
Privilege is all mine, mate. Privilege is all mine.
I don't know about that. tell us all how your summer has been going.
It's been fascinating. I'm just back from Europe. When I say Europe, I mean the British Isles and Ireland. I was at a wedding. My friends, George and Lisa, now named Mr. and Mrs. Patterson.
Ooh, congratulations to George.
Yes, and they were married, and they were married in London. So I arrived in London for the wedding, spent a few days there. It was frantic at times, you know. Obviously, getting ready for a wedding, it's very stressful and stuff. But I had a great time meeting people, meeting new friends, making new friends.
And George does our music.
Yes, and for those wondering who George is, he does the theme music for the show.
Yes.
So we had a great time there. Drove up to Middle England and the Lake District for a night, and then moved up to Scotland for a few days, then over to Cork. So it was a great time. Frantic, as I say, but it was a great time.
An action-packed 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I'm getting old. Well, I was there. I turned 45. I'm now middle-aged. If I live to 90, I am officially middle-aged.
The halfway mark.
Yeah, so that happened. I flew back to London from Ireland on my birthday. Had this grand idea that the pilot would say, happy birthday to Andy Reid on the plane and maybe move me to first class. But it was a tiny plane and there wasn't any first class, so...
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps next time.
Yeah.
The next time you turn 45.
In another lifetime.
As one of those enormous turtles that live in the ocean. While you were in Britain, did you have any excellent British food?
Oh, yes.
Like what?
For a breakfast I had, we stayed in bed and breakfast a few times, myself and Julie, my girlfriend, and because when you stay in a bed and breakfast, you get the full British breakfast in the morning, which consists of egg, bacon, Canadian bacon, sausage, beans, tomatoes, mushrooms, and on one occasion we were served a slice of haggis.
Oh.
With our breakfast, which was great because the night before I was swirling when we're in a restaurant to get haggis, potatoes, and mashed potatoes and turnip, but I decided to get something else, and the next morning I was confronted with this nice haggis.
Sheep stomach filled with ground meat.
In my breakfast, and it was gorgeous.
Wow, no kidding. Well, maybe not the most appetizing to the general American public, but... It does sound like it might be.
Yeah, and, chocolate, all the chocolate you get. And, I put weight on, I put on 2 pounds or something while I was away. But I enjoyed every moment of it. So
it's a little piece of the British Isles that you brought back with you.
Yeah.
Two pounds of England and Scotland and Ireland.
Well, it was great. It was great.
Well, I think we should get moving on to our first song here.
Sure.
It's Runaway by Del Shannon. So, Andy, tell us... what is it about Runaway that you would want to take this to the cabin in the Catskills with you?
Well, it's one of those songs that I remember when I lived in a high-rise flat when I grew up in a place called Kennishead in the south side of Glasgow. And when I was young, obviously there wasn't any internet or iPods or anything like that. All you had was a record player with records. Small records were called 45s and the bigger records were called 33s.
Sure.
And my dad had a number of songs, singles that were called the 45s. He had a number of them. And one of them was a song that I loved when we played it on the record player. It was Del Shannon, Runaway. And every time I hear it, because you don't really hear it that much on the radio anymore, because it's an older song, I immediately kind of smell the vinyl of the record, because my dad bought it, it was new, you know, and I could smell the record.
Sure.
When he put it on the record player. So it's just a song that harks back to my formative years.
Childhood.
You know? And it's just, whenever I hear it, it's just a slice of being a kid for, you know, that duration of that song, you know. So just fond memories, basically.
Cool, very good. And for those listening, the song is a story told from the point of view of a man whose girlfriend has run away. Released in 1961, and it's
61.
That old timey kind of like swinging.
Yeah.
So
it's like the theme tune was used in a program years ago, and I think it was the early 2000s or the late 90s, some cop program. And every time I saw, I started watching the cop program because of the theme tune, you know.
And you're smelling vinyl. And
yeah. So, but it's a great song, and I'd defy anyone to not enjoy listening to this song. It's a great song.
Let's listen to it.
Yeah.
Del Shannon, Runaway. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Today we have Andy Reid, co-host of the program itself. That was Runaway by Del Shannon. Good choice, Andy.
Oh, thank you. I was just saying to you, while we were listening to that, there was another song that my dad had that I remember that I always smell vinyl when I hear it, is a song called Devilgate Drive by Suzy Quatro. And again, I've not. You very rarely hear it on the radio anymore. You know, I think that was late or early 70s. But
okay,
a great song. I've never heard for her for a long time either. So
very good.
She's probably working in a factory somewhere,
and singing and entertaining all of her coworkers, undoubtedly. And now moving on to your next item.
Yeah.
First item, I guess that was the first song. This is the first item. You would bring a photo board with pictures of your family.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, Mike, I'm not that big into technology, and it's only recently I've managed to get a phone that takes photographs and stores a lot of photographs. I'm the type of guy who needs to have a physical photograph in front of me for it to mean something, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I know that we can't take technology with us to the cabin, so, you know, I wouldn't be able to take any photographs in a phone of any sort. So I thought to myself, all the people that matter to me, yeah, you know, all my friends, family, anybody that matters to me, I'd like to take them on a board, you know, one of those cork boards you put on your wall.
Or sure, sure.
One of those with all the pictures on it, because when I look at a picture of a particular time, a particular place, I just like to be able to be transported back to that memory.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to be alone in a cabin somewhere, it's great to be able to take your mind away and just, for however long, just take yourself away.
Are there any pictures in particular, any that you can think of?
I think just group pictures of myself and my brothers, and I include my mate George, and I consider him a brother. You know, like photographs of, you know, Thomas, Brian, George, you know, picture of me and Julia, my mum and dad, pictures of me and you, things like that. You know, just pictures of all the people that matter to me, Celtic Stadium, all different things, pictures of Scotland and stuff like that, you know?
Now, I was thinking here, Andy, you're an academic. You know, we're talking about your family, and but you, you're intellectual, you have two master's degrees, very accomplished, straight A's, 4.0, and also
3.97.
3.97. Well, you round it up, and it's, you know. But are there, you know, talking about your family, are there performers in your family as well? Is this a family thing, or is this unique to you?
Well, my mum and dad weren't musicians or anything, and I'd say if one person that comes to mind, my gran was she liked to sing, she liked to have a mic in front of her, and she had a piano in her house. But none of us, every time we went to play it, she was I would say this to her face, she's a grumpy old so-and-so, you know. Mm-hmm. So every time we were in her house and we opened up the piano to play it, you know, well, just make noise, basically, she'd always lambast us and say, get that closed, and, you know, so we never really had any musical, I didn't have any musical influences in the family. It was basically just who I am. I mean, subsequently, my nephew is an actor. My brother likes to bang on the drums, and my younger brother, that was my older brother, he liked to bang on the drums, and my younger brother likes to fiddle about in the guitar, but nothing too. I would say, if anything, George was someone who I was inspired by, because George played in a band, and I thoroughly believed that he would become a rock star.
Yeah.
And if anything, George was somebody who I looked up to.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, move on to our next song.
Sure.
It's Billy, Don't Be a Hero by Paper Lace. It was released in 1974, and I listened to it, and I thought it was kind of an unusual song, because if you really listen to the lyrics, they're powerful, they're sad, but it's to this 1970s kind of cruising beat. You know, it has this snare drum military element. But I would think if it's just like on the radio in the car and you're cruising along, it's like, yeah, this is cool. But if then you listen to it, it's like, oh, wait a second. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is not cool.
Yeah.
You're right. You're spot on there, because this is a song that tells us, like, it's like a novel.
Yes.
You know, it tells a story of a young guy who wants to serve his country. He goes and serves his country, but his girlfriend keeps on telling him, please don't do this. Subsequently, he dies, and his girlfriend is heartbroken. And that's the story summed up. Now, the reason I chose this song is because it's the first song that I ever knew the words completely.
Ah.
And I used to, when I was a young boy, maybe 5, 6, 7, I used to sit about, you know, with my mates outside, and some of the older guys used to say, Andy, sing Billy, Don't Be a Hero. And I would sing, so it was my first ever remembrance of being a performer.
Yeah.
And I used to sing the song when I was out with my mates, and they used to say, Andy, sing us that song. And I did. And to this day, I still know all the words.
Really?
Yeah, it's just bizarre. I just never forgot the words.
I say we just cut the music clip, and you should just sing it right now, a cappella.
The marching band went down along Main Street. The soldier blues fell in behind. I looked across and there I saw Billy waiting to go and join the line. And with a head upon.
Very I'm good.
I'm just remembering, and the reason I'm laughing is because I'm coming up to a bit where the woman sings and she's really high pitched.
Oh, yeah.
I can't reach that anymore.
I can do that part, Andy, but I haven't memorized it yet.
Come back to what you were saying about the army. Mm. Now that I've done some studying about American history and American culture, this song could be about the Union Army.
It is.
You know, the soldier blues and I find it quite fascinating that when I was a young kid, I used to sit, and I lived in a high-rise flat, and I used to look across the horizon. And I used to think to myself, I'd love to go and find out what's beyond that horizon. And I remember watching a lot of American programs like Starsky and Hutch and the Rockford Files, Kojak and stuff. And I remember seeing these guys, you know, they'd have a love interest in the program. They would be kissing and stuff. And I remember when I was about 8, I saw this guy and woman in a van and they were kissing like they do in the programs. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to myself, they must be Americans.
That's how Americans kiss.
That's how Americans kiss. And I always wanted to go to America. So I find it quite interesting that this song about the Union Army is one that captured me when I was a very, very young kid.
And it's a UK band.
Yeah.
That, I got thinking about that too. And actually, if you watch a video, one of their performances, the drummer anyway, like the lead singer, he's dressed in a Union uniform, like a very basic Union uniform. And I got thinking about how much the United States and UK have in common in terms of culture. I was even watching a Simon Pegg movie recently, and a guy got arrested. And when he was arrested, he was read his rights, like his Miranda rights.
Right.
But in the UK, so I thought, I wonder if in the UK, after, you know, Miranda versus Arizona happened in the US, in the UK, they were like, you know, that's a pretty good idea. And vice versa, the same thing happens in the United States.
Yep.
And we have the Austin Powers movies, which are kind of a silly, lampoonish take on UK culture and stuff. But and mullets, you know, 1974 was a little pre-mullet, but it was, you know, you could see, you know, the
I had one,
business in front, party in the back. Yeah. Jeez.
Yep.
Well, hey, let's listen to it, Andy.
Billy, don't be a hero.
Fuck! his fiance got a letter that told how Billy died that day. The letter said that he was a hero. She should be proud he died that way. I heard she threw the letter away.
That was Billy, Don't Be a Hero by Paperless, my second choice of song.
Excellent choice. Moving on to our next item?
Sure.
Matches and Vaseline soaked in cotton balls.
I think you know why I'm taking them.
I do, but I'm sure people are like, what the what? Why is that?
Well, actually, when I was with you, I'd never ever used Vaseline soaked cotton balls to start a fire. But when I did it, when I was with you, and you told me to break it up, put it in the fire, and it worked like a treat, you know, I was like, this is an essential item for when you're camping, because it's very lightweight, it's very, very useful, it's obviously got petroleum in it, and when you need to start a fire, especially if wood is damp or whatever, it's fantastic. So if I'm going to be in a lonely place surrounded by wood, I want to have matches and cotton wool soaked in Vaseline.
Yeah.
Essential to a number of things, one of which I'll talk about later. Very essential to have fire.
Oh, absolutely. And for those listening, if you guys are into backpacking or camping, again, what you do is you take cotton balls, like jumbo-sized cotton balls, and put them in a plastic bag, you know, get a handful or two handfuls, put them in a little baggie, and then put in, you know, three or four tablespoons, you know, heaping tablespoons of Vaseline. You just want to basically get these things pretty much coated in Vaseline. And then you just get all the air out, you know, squish it around in there, seal it up. And then it's this great little kind of inert package of fire starter.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
you need one, you just open the bag, you pull out a cotton ball. And like Andy was saying, you just pull it apart so that the fibers are kind of frayed.
Yeah, loose.
And all it takes is just a little shower of sparks. Yeah. I mean, you got it in like, what, one strike?
Yeah, I was like, this is fantastic.
And it'll burn for a long time. So,
and certainly enough time to get your fire established.
Yeah.
So, it was great.
I learned that a couple summers ago, and I was like, holy smokes, this is excellent. Far better than, you know, taking the little fire starters like the wood.
Yeah, soaked in chemicals.
Yeah, you know, and then they're taking up space in your pack, and they're heavy, and then sometimes they don't even work that well.
Yeah. So thank you for enlightening me, no pun intended, with this new invention
that's
probably been around for centuries.
Well, you'll definitely stay warm.
Yeah, so that was great.
You would make Cody Lundin proud. Probably.
Or unproud, yeah. May the case be.
He's like, you need cotton balls soaked in Vaseline? Really?
Listen, I have shoes. You don't.
Why don't you just bring a flamethrower? Now, your next song is On the Beach by
Chris Rea.
Yeah.
Now,
I thought we had heard this before. I thought that this was Jess Puglisi, WGXE's Jess Puglisi, one of her songs. She chose Neil Young's On the Beach. This one's completely different. Why this song?
Well, years ago when I was 16, 17, I was working in a garage, as we call it in Britain. And there's two types of garages in Britain. There's the mechanic side, and I suppose here as well, there's a mechanical side where people fix your problems in your car that are mechanical, and then there's the other one is the body shop. So I was working in a mechanic's place, and for some reason, the place went out of business and closed down. So because I was on a government scheme, there was a man who was given the task of finding me another place to work
sure.
for the remainder of my time. and he found me this body shop, and I was working this body shop, and it was guys spraying cars. It was a small operation, guys spraying cars and guys fixing fender benders and stuff like that. And I hated it. I just couldn't stand it. So I was working on this car, and I was listening to the radio on every day, and it was the same songs every day. Some of them were okay, some of them were garbage. And one day this song came on, and it really piqued my interest. It was Chris Rea's On the Beach, and I really liked the song. And I remember saying to myself, I need to find out more about this guy. So I didn't, wasn't earning a lot of money, but I spent some of my money buying the 45 single of On the Beach.
Yeah.
And I played it and played it and played it, and I played the B-side, and I really liked the guy. And it forced me to be, because I wanted to find out more about him, it forced me to be, I had to use my brains to find new songs for no money.
Sure.
I started going to second-hand record shops.
Mm-hmm.
And I found about three or four Chris Rea albums that, you know, for very little money. And so began my Chris Rea journey. I loved Chris Rea music. I loved listening to his songs. Some of them were really great lyrics. But he also, because of that, I started finding songs that were from, you know, Motown, Aretha Franklin, Al Green, B.B. King, all these guys. And one album stands out that I remember buying is called Soul Mining, and it was just a brilliant album. So I used to go, On the Beach started this phase in my life where I would be going to secondhand stores to buy songs, and it just kind of is the gateway. That song marks the gateway for me of opening up musical avenues that weren't the norm. So it's a particular poignant song to me. It's a great song as far as I'm concerned, but it marks the beginning of me looking to find alternative music, if you like.
Yeah. You know, I was doing a little research on Chris Rea, and he was an actor in a couple movies.
Yeah, yeah.
One movie in particular, 1999 comedy, it was called Parting Shots.
Yeah, a dark movie, yeah.
Dark comedy. His character is told that he has cancer. He has 6 weeks to live, and so he decides to kill people who have badly affected his life. And his co-stars are Bob Hoskins, John Cleese, Felicity Kendall. As I was reading more about him, 2 years later, 2001, he underwent a Whipple procedure with pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And pancreatic cancer is a vicious, horrible, horrible disease.
Yeah.
But he's still alive, and he made a comeback. And
yeah, I mean, that procedure you talked about there, Whipple, that is fraught with aftermath problems.
Oh, yeah.
And the pancreas is a very, very hard, very, very difficult organ to treat, and it's vital to your well-being, and there's usually a lot of aftermath infections and stuff. So when he was in the operating theatre, just about going to the operating theatre, he made a promise to himself that he would make the albums that he always wanted to make. So
yeah.
Ever since then, and he survived, he's made albums that he really wanted to make, not what the record company wants to make. So
incredible.
Yeah.
On the Beach, Chris Rea.
Ah!
That was Chris Rea on the beach. Good choice, Andy.
Ah, thank you. Now, there is a joke that goes around in Britain that Chris Rea signed up to do a world tour with Dire Straits, and they collaborated on it, and they decided to call the tour the Diarrhea Tour.
I'm trying to come up with a creative pun. I got nothing. Just things like, you know, people were running to the to get tickets.
Such fluidity in the music.
Boo. Hey, you know, I was just thinking, this summer we've had a couple of these supermoons. Have you been able to see that at all?
No. While I was coming here, there was another radio station I was listening to, and the guy was saying about a supermoon, and I thought he was just saying it was a supermoon last night. I don't know what a supermoon is.
It's where the moon is closest to the Earth in its orbit, and it's also a full moon.
Right.
So you're getting the full intensity that the moon can possibly give in terms of moonlight. So I went out on the deck last night, and could see just about perfectly well. And to look right at the moon was almost a little bit uncomfortable.
Wow.
It was so incredibly bright and vivid.
Well, had I known that, I'd have been out last night because I only come back last week. I've got a touch of jet lag, and for those of people who don't know what jet lag is, basically it's nothing to do with your flight, as far as I know. It's to do with the time scales. Britain is 5 hours ahead of America, you know, the east coast of America. So when I'm sitting here, my body thinks it's you know, 5 hours ahead. So, for example, if it's, say, 9 a.m. and I've just woken up, my body thinks it's 2 p.m.
Oh, sure.
And I should be eating lunch. So I've still got that. So although I wanted to sit up last night, by 8 o'clock I couldn't keep my eyes open. So I would love to have seen it. I was in my work last Saturday night and I saw the moon and I took a couple of photographs because it was so bright. And when I was driving home, you know, there was it was particularly luminous, you know, and I was driving home, which was great, you know.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
I think I'll maybe try and look out tonight when I'm in the house, see what it looks like.
Have you ever heard the myth that, you know, all the weirdos come out when there's a full moon and crazy stuff happens and more crimes are committed?
Werewolves.
Yes, there's werewolves.
Yes, I have heard that.
Yeah, I think I've heard they attribute it basically to just people being able to see. So someone's up late at night, goes outside, and they're like, oh, I can see. I'll get into some, you know, not consciously, I'll get into mischief.
It's funny you say that, because I've never really thought of that that way.
You know, they just have the ability to get out. And
do you believe in the myths?
Not in that there's some sort of, like, magical, mythical, like,
have you ever seen a werewolf?
Once.
Yeah?
I think it was a werewolf. It was this huge wolf.
Were you in London?
No, I was here in the Catskills. Yeah. It was terrifying. Just a little thing, but I'm pretty sure I saw it turn into, like, a person.
Yeah?
Yeah. Ran in front of...
Now, are you sure it wasn't Chris Hack? Because he does have a particularly hairy face.
it could have been. Could have been. He was wearing a top hat like Abraham Lincoln.
He'll kill me now.
Yeah. Which will just contribute to the werewolf myth.
Yes.
Now, another item, Andy, that you'd like to take to the cabin in the Catskills is a Scottish fiction short story book.
Yeah, I love short stories. I love fiction. But particularly, I like Scottish fiction. Guys like Alan Massey, Michael Vanney, Alan Spence. Mm. Alan Spence, a particular favourite of mine. He writes with such reality. And when I'm reading a story or I'm reading short stories... about Glasgow in particular, I feel that when I'm trying to escape at that particular time, I am able to escape and be in the moment in Glasgow.
Sure.
So if I'm in a cabin somewhere and I'm bored or I'm feeling a bit lonely or melancholic, I think it would be a good thing for me to be able to drift away for a little bit and be somewhere that I want to be. And the thing about Scottish fiction is whenever somebody's describing something, it becomes more acute to me because I know where they're talking about for the most part, and I understand what they're trying to relate to the reader. because I'm from Scotland.
Yeah. Are there any of these stories in particular that like some of the themes or what they're about or some of the plot lines that you could talk about?
Well, I read a couple of books. Alan Spence has written a book called It's Colours, They Are Fine, and it's about four boys who go to school, and the four of them take different paths as they grow up. And the book interchanges between these four boys as they grow older. One goes to America, one joins the army, the other two work in jobs in Glasgow, and one of them moves to London. So you get to read about these four adventures, four lifestyles as they go older.
Yeah.
Another one is a book called The Changeling. At the moment, I forget who it was that wrote that book, but it's about a teacher, actually, who takes a young boy who's lost his way under his wing and takes him on holiday with him. And subsequently, while they're on holiday in a Scottish town, he dies. But it's a great story, very well written. There's another one about, and again, this is by Alan Spence, a book called Way to Go. And I think an American program was made not long ago, about maybe 10 years ago, on this similar subject. It was like about a man who owned a funeral parlour, and the son was grown up in the funeral parlour with his dad, and sometimes he'd be maybe punished and he'd be sent down to the basement, and he'd go to sleep in the coffins and stuff, and he eventually took over his dad's business when his father died, and he decided to make designer coffins for people. Mm-hmm. You know, like, for example, a coffin style as a motorbike for a biker or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a good book, you know, but it was based in Glasgow, and it was based in a lot of Glasgow.
Kind of like a Glasgow Orange County Choppers or something?
Yeah, but there was a program made, and it was an American program where I think it was 6 feet under or something.
Oh, okay.
And it was about these guys who did funerals to order, where you created your own funeral and designed your own coffin and stuff like that.
Oh.
I wonder if they read the book.
Yeah.
When I first saw the program.
Oh, no kidding. So growing up in Glasgow, from what you've told me and what you're talking about now with these short stories, it doesn't sound like it was a completely boring childhood.
Oh, you know, there's a lot of fascinating things that you could do. And, you know, kids nowadays have got so much at their fingertips in terms of technology.
Hmm.
But at the same time, so they think they have a rich accessibility to all these technological games and things. But to me, in many ways, they're very poor and starved of their own imagination. When we were younger, we had to make up our own games, and we had to develop our own things in order to keep busy and to have fun. So I remember when I was a kid, we would make goalposts, we would make the lines by scraping the ground of the grass and make own the lines from the perimeters of the pitch and stuff. So these things, we used to go swimming every other day, and we used to play games where we'd chase each other and stuff. And it was a fascinating lifestyle.
You know, I just heard recently that they did a study and found that unstructured play for children is critically important to intellectual development.
Yeah.
Like just saying, just go. You know, you don't, not to play any game in particular, any game of their choosing, but, you know, make your own game, make your own rules, interact with one another. And it's that type of critical thought and inner, you know, and kids playing with one another and learning human dynamics and how to get along and stuff. That's like really critically important to childhood development.
Well, you know, my older brother, Brian, he could make games up and he made games up. And, you know, see, when I think back, all of the games he made up were forerunners for the electronic games that we've got now.
Grand Theft Auto.
He made his own dice.
Uh-huh.
And he used to throw the dice and make up fictitious scores for football teams and that you know, and he would sit and make up leagues and calculate the scores and stuff like that. And he would sit and play for hours doing that.
Wow.
And there was a program on the television called Superstars. And basically what it was sporting bigwigs from all walks of the sporting life would come together and compete against each other at like a decathlon. Sit-ups, judo, cycling, swimming, weightlifting, all of these things. So it couldn't happen now because there's too much money in sports because they don't want people injured.
Sure.
But in the 70s, this was a big program. And as you know, it rains a lot in Glasgow. So you're in the house a lot when you're a kid.
Sure.
So my brother Brian made this game, Superstars, and he invented it from us, myself, my sister Sharon, and him. In the house, we'd have like 10 things we had to do in the house against each other. And one of them I remember was he would take my mother's ornaments, she'd these little horse ornaments, and we had to gallop the horses around the perimeter of the living room based on how many gallops you could get by the dice he made.
Sure.
And then, you know, like running up and down the stairs, and, you know, that'd be one of the categories. And, you know,
it's like a whole fitness routine.
Yeah, he made this up, you know. So just like you're saying, your imagination is critical when you're a kid and you don't have any technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids all over in this country and in Britain, everywhere, they made up their own games. They made up their own, they created their own ideas. They developed things. And
so, Andy, now that you're a teacher, do you bring this this background that you have, you know, having to improvise games, make games, you know, playing with a lot of other kids in Glasgow and stuff, does that come into play at all when you're planning lessons or teaching kids?
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, I think sometimes if you rely too much on particular things, then you're kind of starving yourself of going with your gut instinct. And I think, you know, I know that that's always going to be in my armour, you know, to be able to say, right, you know, and having been a substitute teacher, sometimes some teachers are not as good at writing sub plans as others, and you fall short, you've got 15 minutes left, and you go, right, quick, a quiz, because you know yourself, if you give kids free time, problems begin.
If you don't keep kids busy, they will find a way to keep themselves busy.
Yes.
And you don't want that.
Yeah. So, you know, I develop some impromptu quizzes. I tell stories. I do a lot of things. I sing. And I think sometimes it's to deflect from these things that you were talking about. You know, kids being bored. All of a sudden, one kid hits another kid, and you know, and you don't want that.
No, you don't. Hey, I was reminded you were talking about growing up in Glasgow. And it rains constantly, so you spend a lot of time inside. You were just in the UK for a couple weeks. How is the weather July and August, in case people want to travel there during the summer?
Well, during June, July, August, the weather's fair. You know, you'll get some good days. It's not as hot as it is here. Mm. A good warm day is maybe 75 degrees.
Which is comfortable.
Yeah, in London slightly more. Because Britain is an island and it's fairly small compared to America, there is a lot of variable weather, you know, clouds and, you know, swirling around the island, and you do get a lot more rain. So there are a lot of times when, you know, you maybe get two or three seasons in the one day. You know, you'll get rain, then you'll get sunshine, and you maybe get them both together, and then so the weather is, to answer your question, July and August is usually a nice time, but, you know, always expect rain.
Take a raincoat if you're going to the UK.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, your last song that you've chosen is Up the Junction by Squeeze.
Yes.
It's a collect. Now, Up the Junction itself is a collection of short stories by Nell Dunn, and short stories are some of the things you're going to be bringing.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's new to me. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, the lyricist Chris Difford said that the title phrase was lifted. These short stories were also turned into a TV play version of the work in 1968. And there's also a movie. The book itself uses like common day speech. It's portrays some of the rough life, I would say.
Right.
For people in cities and stuff. So it kind of comes from that. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's news to me, and it is interesting. And the reason why I picked this song, because I was sitting thinking about it, because going back to what I was talking about, when I started going to secondhand stores to buy records, there's such a wealth of songs that I could have brought to the table today.
Sure.
You know, Willie Nelson, you know, Motown, numerous Motown songs that I could have brought. Just so many songs, ELO, The Beatles, or you know, any amount of songs I could have picked. But the reason I brought this one is because this song is another one of those songs that I know all the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I've known the lyrics since I was a young guy, and I'll never forget them. And to me, like Billy Don't Be a Hero, this is a story. The whole song is a story.
Yes.
From beginning to end, you know, the happy life, the love, the relationship, the having a baby, everything ending at the end. It's like a novel in a short 3-4 minute song, and it's such a great song in that respect. And to me, it's one of those English bands. Squeeze were a fantastic band, great lyricists, great musicians, and this song epitomizes a great sound for the late 70s, early 80s.
Let's listen to it. Up the Junction by Squeeze.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7. This is Catskill Cabin Conversations. And today's guest is me. That song was called Up the Junction by Squeeze.
Andy, thanks for letting us talk to you and interview you and learn more about you.
Yeah.
This has been great.
It's a great song that I like. Incidentally, you know, just going back to him, we're talking about Chris Rea. I mean, I mentioned off mic that I'd seen Chris Rea play live about 3 or 4 times. The last time I played The last time I saw Chris Rea playing live, the opening act was Glenn Tilbrook, who is the guitarist, I believe, from Squeeze. And he was really, really enjoyable, and he told some anecdotal stories, and he played some good music. And one of the stories was that he played so many towns one night, and he made a mistake of coming out to Glasgow and the infamous Apollo Theatre, and said to them, "Good evening, Edinburgh."
Whoops.
And the crowd were like, you know, and he said, every time I come to Glasgow since, I make sure that the word Glasgow is written everywhere so that when I go out, I don't make the same mistake twice.
Oh my gosh.
But, you know, he was really good. But I found that interesting that when I went to see Chris Rea, one of the members of Squeeze was his opening act. You know, it's funny. But that song, that Up the Junction, it plays a lot of, has a lot of typical British words in it that American people don't really, may not understand, you know. A nappy being a diaper, the telly being the television, and, you know, things like that. It's a typically English written song.
Sure.
You know, British English written song, that a lot of the things could be missed in the song by American listeners. But it's a great song.
Yeah, really cool. And the last thing you'd like to take to the cabin in the Catskills is coffee and filters. Now, before you talk about this, we're gonna jump forward and then come back. First, I have to ask, how do you take your coffee?
Black, Americano. It was a double espresso with water, but black French roast and some sugar.
Now, have you ever tried cream?
Yes, but I don't really do well with milk and cream, but yes, I have.
Okay, so it's not so much a taste thing, although I think maybe you are kind of a connoisseur.
You know, I used to drink cappuccinos religiously every day, at least four of the weekend, and used to drink, you know, and cappuccinos were the way to go for me. But I kept on having stomach problems.
Sure.
And I went to I had an allergy test, a food allergy test, and they said milk's not a good thing for you.
Drat.
So I dropped the milk, and, you know,
was that heartbreaking for you? Like, did you really like milk products at the time?
Well, at the time, I was like, oh my God, no,
ice cream, cookies.
So, but now I couldn't take coffee with anything in it, other than a bit of sugar now.
Hmm.
I just love the taste of black coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But
you roast your own beans?
Well, I've not done it for a while now, but yes, I have roasted my own beans. And
you grind your own coffee?
Yes, I do that. I'm a great grinder. But I buy beans as opposed to ground beans. Because as soon as you grind a bean, you've only got a limited shelf life with the bean left, you know. Unless you vacuum pack it, you know.
And when you do roast the coffee beans, do you do like a long roast? Because there are different types, right? There's dark and medium, and
You get like a city roast, a full city roast, Italian roast, and, you know.
So how do you do yours?
Dark.
So you crank that heat and really let them.
Well, without getting too technical, when you're roasting a bean, there's two cracks. The first crack is when the bean heats up and the outer shell comes off. Or it cracks and it's about to come off. It's called the chuck. And, you know, you'll look in a roaster, you'll see there's an area within the machine that collects all of the shuck that comes off of the bean,
okay,
the shell. And so that's the first crack. And then the second crack is the oil heating up and cracking. So when someone's roasting beans, the length of time prior to, for a very light roast, or immediately after the second crack, which isn't as noisy as the first one, determines how roasted the beans are.
And you'll hear this, like you'll be in your house and you'll be like,
yeah, it's almost, the first one's almost like a very, very subtle popcorny sound. And then the second one's very faint. You need to listen for the second one. But after, you know, depending on how roasted you want your beans, You'll if you're using the same machine over and over, you'll only roast the beans for maybe a minute after the second crack to get this consistency of the roast.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, it's, you know, I did say without getting technical, then I got technical, yeah.
But I think that's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't do that, and that makes, you know, I think we see pictures of coffee beans, and you see that little, like, cross, the cracks in them, and it's just like, well, I don't know, it's just how the beans are, but it's not, you know. It's
and people think when you're roasting beans, you know, you're going to get, oh, this delicious smell. Like, the smell when you're roasting beans isn't that appetizing.
Mm.
It's not an aroma that's going to drive you to coffee. It's a kind of burning smell.
Mm.
But once you've roasted them and you put them into a jar, seal the jar, then open the jar maybe 20 minutes later.
Oh. I'm going to go out and buy some beans and try this.
Yeah.
Sounds excellent. Well, we've come to the end of the show, Andy.
Mike, it's been a pleasure. It's been great to be on the other side of the mic, if you like, being the guest, because now I know what my guests are going to be feeling like.
Absolutely.
when they're getting interviewed. So
good. Well, it's been a great time. Thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you again very, very soon.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Andy Reid, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXE 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone else at WGXE. Thanks.